Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Welcome, everybody, to Aggressive Negotiations, a Star Wars podcast. I'm so sorry. I'm a little bit sleepy. Your imbalance woke me, John. I'm so sorry.
Well, my imbalance is because I had a few too many chickpeas with lunch, but it'll pass. Don't worry.
Okay. That's what it is.
And then balance will return.
Okay, good. Good to know.
Might be a little rocky between now and then, though.
Well, we're just going to dive right in tonight, and we have so much to discuss. And really, the question that I wanted to start off with you tonight is that, you know, for us, as we're recording, John, Rebels started last Saturday, and season three kicked off, and it introduced a really fascinating and interesting character into the Force spectrum of Star Wars.
Yes.
The Bendu. And I wanted just first to ask you, what were your first impressions of this Force character? I wouldn't even say Force wielder, it just Force character.
Okay, I had two reactions. The first is, of course, naming him the Bendu, having him invoke Ashlan and Boga is all tremendous fan service, and I loved every second of it, because for anybody that's not terribly familiar with the different drafts of the original Star Wars, the very first line that Lucas supposedly ever wrote in a story treatment was, "This is the story of Mace Windu, revered Jedi Bendu of Opuchi." And it was Alan Ladd, apparently, that read it and was like, "Hey, a little weird." But Bendu, to bring that back, and then the Ashlan and the Boga, which were the names originally for the light side and dark side of the Force, loved it. Thought it was great. I enjoyed the voice work. Tom Baker did a great job. I enjoy the concept of the character. I even thought the execution was good. And so I enjoyed it. The downside for me, the second reaction, was that, and I'm going to be interested to get your reaction to this statement, I almost wish they hadn't brought him in. Because the way that they used him, and I know that this is going to pay off. This is set up for the rest of the season. And that's why I'm not like criticizing it per se, but it's something where I almost wish they had introduced him later in the season than the first episode. I guess that's my criticism, is that I would have preferred to have, Kanan and Ezra sort of resolve their differences before the Bendu came into it. Because I feel that they've now introduced somebody into the plot who is going to be able to drive character development that I think should really be coming from within the characters. Like, the Bendu's first act in our storyline, basically, is for him to nudge Kanan instead of letting Kanan find his own way to the solution. So I guess I'm of two minds. How did you take? I mean, was it an immediate hit for you?
Well, first I want to say, just to that idea that maybe the characters should have found their own way, I think what was interesting to me about the way that the Bendu related to Kanan was giving him that slight push, a little bit like a good counselor does, but then having the character himself come to the realization. Because he just points him in the direction, and then Kanan has to do the rest of the work. He has to fill in all the details. You know, Kanan even says, I'm feeling it. This about my Padawan. No, wait, that's about me. So Kanan is just pointed in just in the right direction by just the right words so that he can look inside and then find out it about himself and then make the leap that he needs to make of faith by himself. And what I thought was so interesting, too, is that this Bendu being the kind of middle-of-the-road character with the Force, to him there's not really a light or the dark. He's in the middle. He doesn't seem fully active in the Force, but he just seems imbibed by it. what I saw him doing was a really cool thing, very biblical, which was being able to show Canaan how to walk by faith and not by sight. And to me, that was a really strong and very encouraging message to see Canaan have to learn that lesson. But I didn't quite see it like you, where it was all the Bendu kind of pushing him in that direction. It was more of, well, let me tee it up and see if you can get there on your own.
Well, I mean that's a fair point, but like having it, it feels in a way to me that we've sort of been down this road before. With, you know, we've encountered the witches of Dathomir. We've encountered, you know, I know that storyline wise it's much later, but we've encountered Maz Kanata, who is also, you know, I'm not a Jedi, but I know something of the Force. So we've encountered this.
Well, and we counted in Rebels with the Lasats, who know the Force, and they even call it the Ashla. So.
Right. I mean, this is very much a galaxy that is a storyline that is embracing the idea that you're not just a Jedi or a Sith, that there's something bigger at play. We're paying attention to the Jedi and Sith because they're affecting the fate of the galaxy, but it is possible to have blah, blah, blah. I get that. I suppose that there is a thing in me, and this has a lot to do with my reaction to the episode, where when it was the Thrawn stuff, when it was the Empire coming into play and doing something and interacting and, you know, something special was happening in terms of, you know, action and intrigue, those were the parts of the episode where I lit up. And the only way I can really put it is it comes back to, in a sense, I feel like I've gone down this road before, in a sense of, okay, here's a character that doesn't, you know, do the light or the dark thing, but is terribly powerful. And I would rather focus on, you know, something more impactful.
Two things.
You know,
no, I hear you. I do. I really hear you. And I believe me. I think that you have a good point. Are we just kind of going down a road that we have already been down before?
Yeah.
But two things is, one, I think it's really interesting because Dave has already mentioned last season the huge influence that Tolkien and his writings had on the series and his thoughts about what happened to Ahsoka, specifically the fall of Gandalf in his fight with the Balrog and what he became afterwards. So giving us an idea of maybe what might happen somehow to Ahsoka in the future. But that really led me to, and I know I've talked to some other fans. I was talking today on our Twitter account, having a huge Tolkien discussion because of this idea that really the Bendu to me is nothing but Tom Bombadil and an Ent kind of put together. I mean, that he looks like kind of like an Ent, but he acts like Tom Bombadil.
Sure.
Where it's like, you know, he can pick up the Sith Holocron just like he, you know, Bombadil picks up the ring and he's like, oh, look at this. This is cute, you know?
Yeah.
But not just that, but the Bendu seems to be, and I'll give credit where credit is due. My friend Aaron Goen said on another show, just kind of almost an avatar for the Force itself.
Okay, yeah, but at the same time, like I like my Star Wars with the good versus evil battle with the Jedi and the Sith or the Knights of Ren or whomever you're going to throw at each other, and I get the Tolkien influence. I see it. I know the Tom Bombadil thing you're saying and everything like that. And, you know, but for me, I'm looking at it as the Sith Holocron was a thing, right? It was, oh my gosh, it's a Sith Holocron. And oh my gosh, Ezra is messing with it. And oh my gosh, all of this stuff is going on. And then the Bendu picks it up and is like, it's nothing. I'll hold on to it. And it totally undercuts the whole, like, I want that Sith Holocron to remain
the same way that the ring is not undercut by Tom Bombadil by being able to pick it up. Because, and this is the reason I would say that it's not that way because of what the Bendu says about it. He says, an object cannot make you good or evil. the temptation of power, forbidden knowledge, even a desire to do good can lead someone down that path, but only you can change yourself. And so the idea of, and this is very fascinating to me in Star Wars, because it's almost that Harry Potter idea of like personal choices plus destiny together.
Well, yeah, but I mean, that's Luke's story. That's Anakin's story. That's and I get that. It's not that I don't get what they're doing. It's not that I don't get where I think they might be going with this. And I'm not rejecting it out of hand and saying I'm not going to watch the season because of this. But the chasm, the gap, the lack of relationship between Ezra and Kanan in this resolves itself too quickly. I wanted it to extend more. I wanted the Sith after having it built up and after having it be a thing, I wanted the Sith holocron to remain a thing beyond this point. I get what the Bendu is saying. And, you know, yes, just like Bombadil in the ring and everything like that. It's like, oh, well, you know, it's your choices. You know, anybody can throw this at you. You're choosing to do it. But it feels like that what is happening, what could happen, I'm not saying it has happened. We're only one episode in at this point. But what could very easily happen here is sort of what frustrated me about last season, where these things got built up and there was this momentum going, and then they would undercut it. And then it would just sort of like deflate. And I want a build. We're all, you know, we're supposed to be building towards something. We know the trajectory that we're on overall galactically. I want to stay on that. I want to keep building. And this it was the wrong moment to undercut. Even if they'd had the Bendu do that with the holocron in the next episode, maybe. But like in the first episode of the season, it felt too quick.
Well, and I can see what you're saying. And I think that definitely the rest of the season will have a big impact on how we view all of it, obviously. But I also think that it's still going to be an issue. I think I don't think that, you know, Ezra and the holocron and all this, obviously it's not resolved because we're about to get Darth Maul in the next episode, and the holocron, all of that's about to come right back. So it's not resolved. I think that the whole desire that Ezra had is at this point is so deep rooted in his thought process of wanting, I will not let my friends get hurt.
Sure.
It's very Anakin. So they're going to have to deal with that the rest of the season. It's not just going to be fixed, or else we'll call out at the end of the season, horrible storytelling.
Sure.
And I just don't think Dave Filoni is going to do that to us. But I want to ask you a question, because this is something that just occurred to me as we've been talking about this. What if the Bendu's idea is a way that just as Ahsoka may be able to survive somehow, we don't know how, but there's a good chance she's going to come back in something else. What if the Bendu's way of viewing the Force allows Ezra and Kanan to survive beyond what we all thought that they would survive somehow, because they're able to accept something that they learn from the Bendu, and that's the way that these characters don't have to have the end of, well, we all just know they have to die.
Sure. They walk the middle path. They're like Kane from Kung Fu. They're not Jedi. They're not Sith. They're just, they make the same choice that Ahsoka did, which is, you know, I use the Force, but I'm not either. And that's fine. Like I'm down with that. But I think it ties into, and you know, I know I keep harping on the Bendu. And the thing is, people might walk away with this with the impression that like I hated the Bendu. I don't. I liked it. Like I said, I liked what Tom Baker did with the voice. I liked, you know, the characterization of the character. I liked that stuff. But the challenge for the season, especially after this first episode, and especially in what we're talking about, I mean, you can even make the argument that Ahsoka was in this episode because the owl showed up. But I'm going from this episode forward feeling like they need to prove to me that the Bendu was necessary. Because if I just watch this episode, I don't see the Bendu as necessary for the characters to get down that road. There might be something he does in the coming episodes.
Here I go again on my
there you
own.
Go. But like, it, you know, like I want the challenge for this season, Thrawn is necessary. Thrawn, I'm already all in for because of the fanboy baggage that comes with him, but also because new villain for the Empire. like it's sort of an exciting story point that this you know, that this series has been using, that these good guys, you know, they keep having to replace the bad guys that are coming after them. You know, like, you know, Inquisitors keep getting killed and Thrawn has to be brought in and Vader has to take care of things himself. And so they keep throwing, you know, new and different people after these. And I think it's a great way to keep that rogues gallery fresh. So Thrawn feels necessary because they've sort of stymied the Empire. So they're like, all right, well, let's try this. And I want to feel like the Bendu is necessary like that. Like I want to be able to look at this season and say, this season would not have worked without the Bendu, because going off of this season, he borders. He isn't this thing exactly. But to me, the Bendu borders on a storytelling cheat to sort of accelerate the characters more quickly.
Well, and I think that your wish is going to happen, because just as Thrawn in the episode is used very sparingly, the Bendu, I think, is used just enough. He's not overused. I think he's used just for what he needs to do in this episode for Kanan. And again, I think this is more about Kanan's journey specifically than it even was Ezra's journey, or even necessarily about the Holocron per se. It's about Kanan. Because what was so interesting to me is that the Bendu helps Kanan get out of that funk of running away from his responsibilities and from the people that he cares about and from the people who need him. Ezra needs him. Hera needs him. The rest of the rebellion needs him. And he's done what Luke and Han did in The Force Awakens and run away from those responsibilities. And so the Bendu helps get him back into action, but not just in action in the way that he was before, but with a greater understanding of who he is and the Force itself.
Okay.
And I think that's a really cool thing that he's been able to do for that character. And I don't necessarily know if that's a cheat. I think it just makes it the Maz Kanata moment for Rey when gets her eyes opened, and you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but let me qualify it this way then. The end of season two, the reason why it feels like a fast forward button to me is because at the end of season two, there's the, like, I remember being very, you know, it was emotional where it was, wow, what just happened? And, you know, the family is breaking apart and this is heartbreaking and this is tough and what does the future hold? And then I think to wrap that up in the very first episode of the third season feels like it just jumped.
I think you're being a little disingenuous, my friend. It's not wrapped up in the bow here. I think that the way that this episode ends, it ends on some tenuous marks. Ezra's been proven even to himself to not be the person that he thinks he is. You know, he's not the S, okay? He's not even close to being the S. He's just, he just kind of been acting like a little S
sure,
the whole episode.
Sure, yeah.
You know, and I think that he sees that a little bit, but I think he's been fed enough by the Holocron that is right under the surface still. And I think there's a lot of other things that are going on here, and I think this is just the tip of the Bendu. Like, you know, they actually thought that the Bendu would be something that would be so large that the base would be built on him, and then when he woke up, they would be, like, really shocked. But, you know, you wouldn't recognize him when you move up to him while he's sleeping, where, you know what I'm saying, like, I think that this is just the tip of the iceberg for this season, and everything is about to get worse than Empire Strikes Back for everybody.
Okay.
You know, I think it gives it a hopeful note, but also to me, there's a real sense of foreboding about everything that's coming.
Look, I can get to where you are, but I would say that, and this is a horrible analogy, but
I mean, if you can get to Love the Force Awakens, you can get to where I am on this.
Okay. Turn that around, son. But what I would say is that, you know, if this were envisioned as a race, we can both get to this finish line. I think we can both get there depending on what they do moving forward. But I don't, you see this as sort of like a good jump, a good start at the go. Whereas I view it as more of a, oh, I expected a little more pep off the line here. But let's shift instead, because we've made mention of him. Let's shift, I think, to Thrawn, right? Because I think that they did something very cool, where it really seems that they've taken Palayan and changed him out for somebody inspired from Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, which I thought was an extremely clever reference.
You mean Governor Price?
Yeah. I think that's really cool. Like, she looks and behaves. I'm like, oh, I know where you
just
got that.
Like Spalko. Yeah. No, it's funny because actually, I love her being introduced into this role. We're finally meeting her. I think she's fantastic. She has a great political mind. You know, she's the one who basically brings Thrawn in. I think that's wonderful. But and I have to give credit where credit's due. Listening, I think it was to the Ion Cannon podcast. Somebody said something about Kallus being the Palayan, like basically the guy that you can respect on the other side because he's become respectable. Like, I could see Kallus going that way.
Oh,
like,
no, being, sure. In terms of characterization, yes. But I'm talking about like a Thrawn, you know, having a right hand being, you know,
yes.
Like Palayan served, and
yes.
Only I guess this is evil Palayan. So, you know, that's
yeah,
cool.
There you go. Evil Palayan.
Evil Palayan, which is strange to say because Palayan was for the... Oh, well, anyway. But that dynamic actually excited me. Like that, you know, with a season premiere, what I typically look for, and I will make reference to a show that I've, you know, loved since I watched it, Lost. The season premieres were always... They were like a story arc that would go over two or three episodes. And the very first one, it would end and you would say, oh, what? Wow, there's so much energy and possibility in this. And that's where I saw, you know, that's where I heap the praise with this episode is on, you know, those two characters coming on. I got excited. I am excited for those characters. And I guess maybe that's why, for me, the focus on the Bendu fell a little flatter than for you, is because that was where my excitement was.
Well, I think... Two, that we have to remember, this is a two-part episode. So that means this is actually two parts of Rebels. Usually that's 30 minutes. And so,
right.
You know, this, you know, from now on, I even think I saw on Disney XD on my DVR that the next episodes were them re-showing this, but they'd cut it into two different episodes. So, you know,
I'll be very interested then to see how that works. It's entirely possible that this would work better for me as two episodes than as the 1 hour block they showed.
Right. And I think if you think about it in that way, if you had to wait, you know, midway through, that you might be better in that mindset. And so,
well,
I think this is.
I'll do that. I'll watch it as two separate parts, and I will see if I think that it flows a little bit. Because the thing is, like taking the two parts and like slapping them together, that's, you know, not necessarily how they were, you know, constructed, and that might be what I'm reacting to.
Well, and it could definitely be that, but it also could be too. I think that just watching through the episode, I'll be very honest. I think that there were some miscues with the editing. That where it could have been a little bit smoother, you could have stayed with one storyline a little bit longer to
sure,
make that storyline
yeah.
flow a little bit better.
Yeah.
So I think that might have helped as well. But part of that also might be this whole idea that it was more two different episodes, and you know they've weaved them together, and so that's one of those things where, you know, I know that some of the showings that they do where mm-hmm. they weave two different episodes, they'll actually recut the episode a little bit to make it flow as like an entire hour.
That
and
might
so
be
maybe
it.
You know, this would have been helped if they had done that a little bit more and really kind of made this feel more like a feature.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I you know, there's no other way to test the theory than to
recut it ourselves. Yeah. Just kidding.
Well, that's what Matt's going to do. In between this episode and next, Matt is going to recut it and rescore it. Actually, I believe you're going
to. No, I am no Kevin Kiner, I do have to say the cue for Thrawn is very creepy.
Oh, I agree.
They have it on StarWars.com, and I was listening to it, and I actually put it at the end of the 602 Club episode we did about the Rebels opener, and it was just it made my skin crawl a little bit. But no, to get kind of back to your question that we had gotten about Thrawn, I actually really thought that they nailed the character in every single way, that he felt exactly like I thought he would be from the book. And I love the way that he talks. I love that it's slow and methodical. He doesn't say anything that he probably hasn't thought about for hours. And I think that the mannerisms that they chose for the animation are perfect, and the voice work is phenomenal.
And it's Mads Mikkelsen's
brother.
This
is not a showy character.
Isn't it Mads Mikkelsen's brother that's doing...
It is Lars Mikkelsen, yes.
Yeah, so, you know, I know...
In fact, he was on... Oh, gosh.
I know that it's not, there's a part of me that hopes they're doing some sort of little Easter egg hint with that. Is there something, some sort of clue they're giving us about Rogue One in this? Which I don't think they are, but I think that would be neat if they were. I mean, honestly, I think that probably... Because his voice is so similar to Mads Mikkelsen, it sort of brings out a very, if anybody has watched the show Hannibal, it actually adds a dimension for me that makes him, it makes me relate to him the way that Hannibal sort of operated in that show, where he was he was beyond morality almost. And that's sort of the feel you get from Thrawn, is like he's just doing his thing. He doesn't actually care whether there's a right or wrong about what he's doing. It's just what needs to be done.
Well, and they bring that up in the episode, saying, weren't there more civilian... Because Kallus brings this up. Weren't there more civilian casualties in your big win?
Yeah.
And yeah, he just brushes it off like as if it doesn't even matter.
Yeah.
The objective was complete. That's all that matters. And yeah. So I thought that was a very interesting distinction between where Thrawn is and where we see Kallus. Because, you know, the last time... I could be wrong, but I feel like the last time that we saw Kallus, he was on a planet that he had been with Zeb.
Right.
And he must have had to find his own way back to the Empire.
Well, obviously, so, he got there.
Yeah, he's got there. Yeah. But, you know, it seems like this is a man who doesn't really feel as much a kinship maybe anymore than he used to.
Possible, entirely possible.
So I liked that whole scene. I love the way that they dealt with Thrawn, and I actually really just like that Thrawn seems more like that garden snake who's just in the weeds. Don't see him coming. He's not loud or anything like that, and before you know it, you're going to be his, you know, and that's exactly what he should be. Because you don't want to overplay Thrawn, because that's not who he is.
I completely agree. Now, as we're sort of wrapping up here, I want to throw out there, I'll give you mine, and then I want to get yours. My favorite moment from the entire 1 hour experience had to be Rex hanging out the back of the ship, taking his shot, and it's like, even with somebody holding onto his foot while he's dangling out the back of a ship that's beating down through the atmosphere, he makes it. You know, like, it's, I love that. It might be, you might consider it fan service, but for me, those little moments are little treasures throughout any Star Wars series, you know, Clone Wars or Rebels, where it just made me giggle, and I had a good time with it. And that's why it's my favorite point in the episode. What's your number one spot?
Oh man, that is tough. Because there's a couple that I really like, but I think mine actually might be this little tiny moment where they are fighting another one of those decommissioning droids, and Rex is beating it back and forth with this huge crane. He's like, take this, you clanker!
That's right, he calls him Clanker. Yeah.
Yes, yeah. And it's just, it's so fantastic that, you know, Rex is just back in that action, and to him it's just another clanker, it's just another droid to take care of, and It was
yeah.
It was such a wonderful reminder of how much I love D. Bradley Baker and his vocalization of the clones and Rex specifically.
And you know, it's funny because this, bringing it full circle, one of our very first episodes here on Aggressive Negotiations was talking about small moments. That might have been our very first one, wasn't it?
That was our first one.
So if anybody, I think we just yet again illustrated, because our whole premise with that episode, and if anybody wants to go back and listen to it, just look us up on thenerdparty.com under Aggressive Negotiations. You'll be able to get to our very first issue, which is actually issue zero, where we talk about small moments. And I think that talking about these little Rex moments is another example of how Star Wars can shine just even in these little storytelling idiosyncrasies that are just so much fun.
I have a question to ask you now, kind of circling back for the episode about the Bendu. Where do you think that they will take this character in relation to Ezra and Kanan and the Jedi, the Force, all that with this season?
I don't want to say what I hope or don't hope. Where I see it possibly going, and I would be very welcome to them surprising me and not going down this road, is having Thrawn find them and then the Bendu like going out in a blaze of glory. I want them to have him remain a non-combatant, somebody who dispenses advice and never gets directly involved. That's what I hope they don't go down the road of the Bendu being in a position of saying, well, fine, I'm going to get involved, and then doing something big that defeats Thrawn. I want him uninvolved so that these characters go up against Thrawn and have to beat him on their terms. So I would say that where I hope they go with it, where I think they go with it, is the Bendu, like you said, just becomes the counselor. And when they hit rocky points emotionally, they can go talk to him and he sort of helps them along.
I see where they could take him the Ent route and make him a character who finds a reason to not be in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that will happen, because I think that that would ruin the point of the character.
Yeah.
And I think what is going to happen is going to be what you just said, where he is this character who is more like the Maz Kanata. You know, she knows the Force, but it does seem more like they're just there to be the good counselor, give advice, and to help you have your mind open to a way of thinking, to a different side, to a different perspective, a different point of view than you had before. And I think that's what he did for Kanan in this episode. And Kanan, I think what the wonderful thing was is that it helped open a light side. It helped open the light side of the Force to Kanan in a way that he had never expected it to be open to him. So I don't even think it's about, him becoming more about the middle or anything. I feel like it's just about opening up the Force without the dogmatic views of the Jedi. And, that's I think, going to be an interesting thing to see, whether that's a good thing or that's a bad thing, because from all we know of the prequels, the dogmatic view of the Jedi didn't turn out to be so good for everyone.
The interesting thought that triggers with me, and I don't think this is going to happen, but I think that every time we meet one of these middle of the road characters, they're like dispensing advice and talking to the good guys, right? I'd be so fascinated to see, not in the show, but maybe somebody could do a short story or something, somebody like the Bendu interacting with a Sith or with a dark, with Maul or something like that. Would he be as, oh, hey, how you doing? Here's some good advice for you. Maybe you should consider these sorts of things. Like, I want to see what the interaction would be like with a bad guy. That could be a lot of fun if Maul winds up encountering the Bendu, and they just have an awkward conversation. That would be so neat to me. I don't think we're going to get that, but it would be so cool.
Could be interesting. You never know. I think you have something there. I think it would be really special and interesting for everyone to be able to see an interaction with Maul and the Bendu and how that would work, because I feel like the Bendu's attitude would be very much the same. Oh, well, you're so cute.
Well, yeah.
Look at you in your bed,
Maul
paint and your
lunging
horns
at him, and the Bendu just like putting up his hand and like Maul freezing his, and the Bendu just like, all right, it'll settle down, son. Like, but I always wonder though, with these sorts of characters, they're always giving advice to the good guys. Would they be just as free with their advice so long as the bad guy didn't threaten them? Or is there something about the bad guys that makes it inherent that they would threaten them anyway because they'd be threatened by the power? You know, like, it's a whole interesting dynamic that I would like to see explored somewhere. It'd be so cool.
What I think that this season, and just spilled out, that I think this season of Rebels is going to do is going to connect a lot of things. I think it's going to start connecting, obviously, to the Rogue One and to Episode 4 even more so, but I think it's going to be laying a lot of track for things that we'll see later on down the road. We already know Dave Filoni is now the executive producer of Rebels, and I think that means we're getting a new animated series in the next few years, and my guess is that animated series is going to take place between Episodes 6 and 7, and that they're laying a lot of the foundation of what they're going to use. I think Ahsoka is part of that, and I think Luke is going to be a part of that. And we could see some more of these characters as a part of it for that journey for Luke. And I think that would be phenomenally fascinating. I think that would be one of the best things that they've ever done. So that's kind of where I see this season going. And if I don't know how many more seasons we have of Rebels. Maybe one or two more.
If I were a betting man, I would say that they're locked in for 5 seasons because that's syndication territory. And I know that we live in a different era of streaming and those sorts of things, but you know, you get yourself a cool, you know, 80 to 100 episodes that you can put in rotation on Disney XD, you know, you're doing all right then. So that would be my bet. But my other bet is that we're coming to a close fairly soon on our review contest for Aggressive Negotiations. And so if you've not yet had your chance to get over to the iTunes store and drop in your star rating and review, you have to put in a written review so we can identify you, because we don't get identification on who gave us star ratings. So please write a review, and you will be automatically in our drawing for a nifty little prize pack that we're going to send out to you, whoever's name gets drawn. And what's going to be in that prize pack, Matt?
Well, what's going to be in that prize pack are a couple of great things from the Smuggler's Bounty box that I get personally, and I thought it'd be great to give these away to listeners, whoever had given us a review that wins. And we've got an amazing C-3PO hat, ball cap, as well as a mug featuring your very own Jabba the Hutt. Jabba. Not Jabba, Java.
Yes.
So, fantastic. And, you know, I have to say, Rogue One Force Friday is coming up. In fact, as we record, it's coming up tomorrow or midnight, John. I don't know. I might just throw in something Rogue One as well. So you never know.
I'm calling dibs on anything Rogue One you get. I have to preview that because, come on, hook a brother up. Come on.
And another thing that we want to throw our listeners' way that they should be doing is checking out Loot Crate, John, because Loot Crate is a fantastic service. It's a subscription box, and that subscription box is less than $20 a month, and each month you get a box full of amazing pop culture goodies. And this month, John, tell them what they could get if they subscribe to Loot Crate.
Well, with it being, coming up on Halloween, it's their Shocktober theme, and they're going to have a bunch of neat stuff from some really frightening properties that, as a horror fan, I am excited that they're including these. They're going to be including stuff from Friday the 13th, Halloween, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, basically stuff that makes your skin crawl, the stuff that gives you the good fun jump on a fall evening. And so go over to lootcrate.com/nerdparty. Enter the code NERDPARTY at checkout, and you will get a discount on Loot Crate, and your first box will feature nifty goodies from these awesome properties. Honestly, if there's anything that shaped me as much as Star Wars, it's going to be horror movies that I watched while I was growing up. So you could be getting a look.
That explains a lot.
Doesn't it? They could be getting a look into my soul by signing up for Loot Crate. So there you go.
Well, John, there's a lot of places that people can find us online. One of them is Twitter. We're at The Jedi Masters. And, of course, the Nerd Party is at Join Nerd Party. So you can find us on either place there. I had an amazing conversation today on our Twitter account with some fans about the Tolkien influences here we've been seeing in Star Wars. So that was a blast. So follow us there. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And we've been getting some great emails. Just got a great email from listener Colin across the pond talking about our episode we did on Luke and Anakin and the difference there. Really appreciate that. Got a chance to respond back. So you can email us at an@thenerdparty.com. That's A as in Apple, N as in Nancy, @thenerdparty.com. We love getting emails from listeners.
We do.
And, you know, then they can find us on Facebook as well, John.
They can. Go to facebook.com/thenerdparty, and you will find postings from all of the shows, from Nerd Nuptial, from the Senate Floor, the Filibuster, Aggressive Negotiations. Plus, we have the occasional unboxing from Loot Crate and other news that has to do with all of the different stuff that's going on in the Marvel and DC universes in the upcoming fall, film season. I mean, you know, we're about to get heavy into awards season, and you know that we're going to be posting a lot of stuff there. But outside of Facebook, Matt, where can they make contact with you?
Well, you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. You can also find me on the Trek FM network doing a show called The Orb with Chris Jones, where we talk about Deep Space Nine. You can also find me on Literatrex with Bruce and Dan talking about the books and the comics of Star Trek. We also get a chance to interview the authors. It's a lot of fun. And then I do the General Geek Show there, which is a blast, where it's called the 602 Club. We talk about all things geeky outside of the Star Trek fandom with all the other fandoms that we love. One of the big ones we talk about is Star Wars. There's actual 602 Club Star Wars special feed. It's called Star Wars, a 602 Club feed. It's fantastic. There's so many great shows there that you're going to want to listen to. Episodes I think people would just love, especially if you just love all things geeky like I know both you and I do. And you're on so many of the 602 Club episodes, so people should definitely check that out for more of your dulcet tones. But enough about me and where they can find me. Where can they find you, John?
Oh, well, Matt, of course, you can find me social network of choice. Look for Kessel Junkie. That's where I am. And you can find me also over on the Trek FM network, co-hosting Stage 9 with Mike Schindler, where we explore the non-Trek works of Trek creators past and present. You can find me over on Words with Nerds with my pal Craig, where we sling hash at all of the different geek properties. And outside of that, you can turn on the bat signal and I'll eventually show up.
That's why you didn't show up the other night. The bat signal was showing in the other city.
That's right. That's exactly right. But you know what, Matt? I think there's really only one thing left to say. I think it's time to close negotiations.
John, negotiations are closed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.